Blog Talk Radio.
There's the snap, hand to Riggins. Good hole. He's got the first down, the 40. He's gone. The 35, the 30, the 20. He's gone. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
Woo-hoo. Kick up. Kick his ball away.
It's good. It's good. It's good. Adam Vinatieri goes to 40. 8-yard field goal. And the game is over. And the Patriots.
Gets the snap. He's back. He pumps. Scrambles around. Throws it back corner of the end zone. Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio holds. I don't know how he did it. Dominique Rogers Cromartie doesn't know how he did it. But they rule touchdown in the far right corner of the end zone.
In motion. Comes right. Back to throw Montana. Steps up. Throws. Touchdown.
Welcome into another Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Frat House, my company here. And we've just concluded week 6 of the NFL. And, well, that's what we do here on Tuesday nights. We're going to sit back for the next 90 or so, and we're going to break down some of the bigger games that we saw this past weekend. And that may very well, as well, have implications to preluding into week 7. That's what we do here on Tuesday nights. Just look around. Look around. Steelers lost this past week. Lost more than on the scoreboard. If you're a Steelers fan, as they lost Ben Roethlisberger. But I got to tell you something. They might just be the luckiest team around. Because as it appears right now, they really may not miss a beat at all. Yeah. We're going to look at their schedule. We're going to look at what they might lose without Ben Roethlisberger, who is projected. He might miss 2 weeks, and that might only be one game. How about that one? Who might he lose it to? Well, it's very possible that they could lose this week to that one-man wrecking crew over there with the New England Patriots, Tom Brady. I got to be honest, folks. I really thought the guy was going to come back from the suspension. I thought he'd be a little bit rusty. He's been just exactly as advertised. The guy has been a one-man wrecking crew right now through 2 games, throwing for 75% completion rate and 6 touchdowns so far over just 2 games. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. The Kansas City Chiefs, they brought my... I hate to say it, I like the Raiders. It brought my likable Raiders back to earth this week. I'll tell you something. The Raiders lost, and they lost ugly. It just seemed like they couldn't do anything. Not a thing. They couldn't get anything going. But anyhow, we'll talk about that one and what the implications are over there with the AFC West. Seattle Seahawks and... Atlanta Falcons, well, they found themselves in a somewhat expected offensive shootout. Yeah, it was a defenseless game, as predicted here by one Brandon last week. We'll take a look at that one. Falcons lost that one. They'll put another loss in the column there for the Falcons, huh, Brandon?
Yep.
Is it possible we might be referring to the Dallas Cowboys right now as the best team in the NFC? And of course, now all the conversation getting really cranked up with Romo, Prescott, Romo, what to do with Romo. Oh, boy, we might get into a little bit of that here this evening. Just one unbeaten team remaining, and they were on a bye last week, and that's the Minnesota Vikings. Question is, do they stay perfect this week? They're going to be playing up against the Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia, who just came off of their second loss in a row, and it wasn't a pretty loss at all. That's for sure. Yeah, we might do a little speculating on that one as well. All of that plus, if anybody out there listening wants to jump in with us, hey, look, that's why we do it here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't hesitate. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here in studio. 347-826-9964. Don't be shy. Just pick it up. Give us a call, even if you want to talk about a game that perhaps maybe isn't on our radar. Doesn't matter. Got a team you want to talk about? Give us a holler. Otherwise, I got Brandon Mann in the chat room here at Blog Talk Radio. He'll be picking up on any comments you want to leave us there, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frathouse Mike is how you can get me on Twitter at Frathouse. Hard to believe we're at week six, going into week seven, Brandon. I mean, some things in the league coming into a little bit of focus now. And, you know, when you're like 2 weeks in, 3 weeks in, you really don't want to project too much. You don't want to start to speculate too much. But now you start to – there are some things I think you can start to make some accurate presumptions about. For instance, Carolina Panthers just play taps now, right? I mean, that team – stick a fork in the Carolina Panthers. They're done. How impossible? I mean, 1-5. Who would have thunk this one? You know, so you look at that one. You know, the NFC North is going to come down between Minnesota Vikings and the Green Bay Packers. That we know. That's the way it's going to go. And at this point right now, that could be, you know, I'm not willing to go out on a limb and even make a speculation on that one because you got way too much of the season. But I think you can feel fairly secure. That's probably the way that one's going to come down. And one of the presumptions you can make about the NFC East is that it's a better division than a lot of people had probably projected it to be preseason. AFC West is a very interesting little part of the AFC with the Oakland Raiders and the Denver Broncos tied at the top of the division at 4-2, but don't rule out the Kansas City Chiefs now. The AFC North, Pittsburgh Steelers, as I just pointed out, might just be, in my opinion, perhaps maybe one of the luckier teams out there right now, one of the luckier prospective playoff teams out there right now, having lost Roethlisberger, but it's appearing now it won't be all too long. Buffalo Bills are a little bit of a surprise at 4-2. Something starting to come into projection a little bit. Carolina Panthers, what's your assessment?
They look done. I don't know. I don't know how to explain the Panthers. I mean, I was watching a little bit of Monday Night Countdown last night, and they were bringing up the fact that, you know, they lost Josh Norman in free agency because they didn't want to pay him. And they went from having, like, the fifth-best defense to, like, the 28th best defense. So, you know, and their secondary's young and can't stop anybody. So, you know, maybe that's where, you know, it's hard to say one player makes that big of a difference. But, you know, Washington's not looking too bad at 4-2 with Josh Norman when the Panthers are – sitting there at 1-5 without him. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm not sure. I think the Panthers, you can probably just about say they're done. I mean, they're already 1-5. I don't see them, you know. The only saving grace is I think they're in a very, very weak division. Atlanta's off to the best start, but I you know, I contend they're going to be, they're probably just based on their start going to probably win the division, but they're not going to go far because their defense can't stop anybody. You know, they can put up points, but when they run up against a team that has a good defense and they can't stop, even if the team's offense is just middle of the road, they're done. So, you know, I think the Panthers, you can pretty much say, to answer your question, they're probably pretty much done. I hate to say that this early, but.
And Carolina can, you know, with all things considered there, they've already gone through their entire division once already out of the six games, and they're 0-3 in their division. So that doesn't help in any respect whatsoever. I mean, they have no wiggle room there in the division at all. So there, that becomes somewhat clear. What else did I, NFC North, it's going to come down to Minnesota and Green Bay. The NFC East is really starting to look like it's Dallas Cowboys to lose at this point. I mean, after the Eagles have lost two in a row.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, and if you look back to the one Cowboys loss, I mean, you know, I've been beaten it to death, you know, if not for, you know, some brain dead receivers, you know, not getting out of bounds, you know, Prescott could be sitting at 6-0, you know, or at least they would have had a shot at it. Anyway, they were in within field goal range when they ran out of time. They just managed the time at the end of that first game very, very bad. So, you know, I don't think unless something changes. I mean, the Eagles seem to have lost momentum all of a sudden. They were looking like world beaters, and maybe, you know, the thumping they put on Pittsburgh went to their heads a little. If Peterson can get them back in check, maybe, but I don't think, you know, this week they got a tough task with the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings have a solid defense, giving up one of the fewest points against in the league. Now, granted, they already had their bye, but still, they were in that conversation before the bye. Their offense has, you know, been serviceable, and Bradford has not been making any mistakes. And, you know, by the way, Bradford's going back to Philadelphia where he played last year, so he may have a little chip on his shoulder to boot. So I don't see things getting easier for Eagles this week. That much I will tell you.
There's
I'm not
no
saying
doubt
it's
about
not
that.
Without the realm of, you know, them winning, but, you know, it's I don't see this as an easy game, not by any stretch. I think this is probably
a true
test.
And one of the odd things about that Eagles matchup with the Vikings, Brandon, has been right from the start, has been the line on it. The game opened late on Sunday night when they opened up for the lines for next weekend's games. The line originally opened as a 1-point favorite for the Eagles. It then dropped back to being a 2.5-point favorite for Minnesota, and that is slowly now creeping up. And right now, it's a 1.5-point favorite for the Vikings. You would think, this is just where I'm sitting. The eye test for me would say that Minnesota should be a much more favored team than 1.5 points, even on the road against the Philadelphia Eagles, who have not looked very good in the past 2 weeks. I mean, look, the Detroit game, I think that could have gone either way, to be honest with you. But this past week, really bad, in my opinion, in a couple of different important areas. One of them was just penalties, flat out penalties. Last week, the officiating crew was getting steamrolled by fans for a badly called game. You can't call that twice in a row. The Eagles have been hit with almost 30 penalties in the past 2 weeks. And I think if you count in the game before that, they're right now on pace, an NFL record for the most penalties ever by a team in the entire league, if you were to extrapolate it out over a 16-week schedule. It just really, the penalties, as you well know, were just absolutely infuriating to me. And I wasn't blaming the officiating crew this past week. So what I guess my point is, what I'm surprised at is I'm surprised that Minnesota is just a mere 1.5 point favorite. And in fact, the game actually opened as a 1 point favorite for the Eagles.
Well, so the line's moved 2.5. That's telling you the money's going on the Vikings, even though the game is in Philadelphia. So,
it's,
you know,
it moved to 2.5, but now it's back up to 1.5. So the
money. If it started out at 1.5,
it started
Minnesota's favored by 1.5. That's a 2.5 point swing. That's what
sure.
I mean.
Okay.
So
okay.
The money all hit on the Minnesota side. That's why the line's moved the way it's moved. So that's telling you all the bettors think the Vikings got that. You know what I mean? They're taking the Vikings, you know, they were all over it, the Vikings plus a point. And even now, if it's moved to 1.5, probably move 3 or 4 times if they go a half
yes.
a point at a shot. So
yep.
they're still betting on the Vikings. So, you know, I agree with you. The Eagles need to pick up the discipline a little bit and cut down on some of those penalties. They were a little ludicrous, if you ask me. But, you know, especially for a team coming fresh off a bye like that, the Eagles should have looked better than they did. And, you know, you can't really put it at Carson Wentz's feet. He's still playing pretty well.
He wasn't
the problem. Yeah, the problem is, you know, all the stupid penalties they make. It's not just,
yep.
you know, it's false starts. It's,
yep.
It's holding. It's, you know, it's dumb stuff that's just killing them. So
yep.
they need to clean up.
That penalty by Fletcher Cox on the quarterback where they could have held them to a field goal, but it turned into a touchdown ultimately because we gave them a first down. I mean, you know, that sort of thing just really, really infuriated me. So,
well, you know, I'll be honest with you on that particular play. I thought that was kind of a questionable call. I mean, because he did hit him as he threw the ball, and he didn't hit him to the head, or he didn't hit him, you know, anything in particular. They just were, I guess they were saying he could have stopped, but he really couldn't because, I don't know, that was not a clear penalty to me. But, yeah, you're right. You know, they should, you know, caution on the side of, you know, be cautious about it and not take that risk.
Oh, yeah, and particularly, see, I hear what you're saying. You know, perhaps maybe that was, you know, one of those that could have gone one way or the other. But I think Fletcher Cox has to know that in that particular place at that particular time, here you are, it's third down, and if you hold him here, you know, you're going to hold him to a field goal. Don't do something stupid, period. That's what it comes down to. Just don't do something stupid. But anyhow. I don't necessarily have the Eagles on the agenda here for this evening. Actually, on this night, we have everything on the agenda, but they weren't highlighted on the agenda. Let's get to one of the ones that are highlighted on the agenda. That was the Pittsburgh Steelers losing to the Miami Dolphins. 30-15 they lost. I'm going to be honest with you, even before the Roethlisberger injury and he went out, with the meniscus issue, actually, he played almost all of the game anyhow, but they really weren't playing well. Pittsburgh was not playing well, period. It just looked like it was Miami's day. As it turns out, however, Brennan, it's actually sounding like, as I alluded to, that the Pittsburgh Steelers might actually turn out to be a pretty damn lucky team under the circumstances, under the conditions here. They're going to lose Roethlisberger for this game coming up this week, which is against your Patriots. Now, that is a home game, I believe, for Pittsburgh. So they're going to play that one at home. But you're going to have, what's his name, Jarvis Landry in there. And the statistics for Landry
It's Landry Jones.
Oh, it's Landry Jones. I'm sorry. Jarvis Landry is the wide receiver. Right.
Jarvis Landry is the wide receiver for the Dolphins.
Wide receiver,
the Dolphins.
Right. Actually, he's not with the Dolphins any longer, I don't think.
Oh, he's not?
I don't think he's with the Dolphins. He's not with the Dolphins.
He had seven catches for 91 yards last week.
Did he? For the Dolphins?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm wrong all the way around. But okay.
I'm looking at the game because we're talking about it. That's all.
Landry Jones. Okay. Landry Jones is going to come in there, and the numbers are you know, off the chart bad versus Roethlisberger. But so the Steelers may go into this game saying, okay, we might take a hit here. We might take a hit here. But it's very possible they could get Roethlisberger back for the Ravens game on November 6th because then the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to go on a bye for week 8. So they'll play against the Patriots. They'll be off for a week. They come back on November 6th, and it's very possible that they could be prepared to, you know, they could take that Roethlisberger could be ready to play in Baltimore against the Ravens, which is a division game. An important division game.
From what they reported last night on Monday Night Countdown, Schefter was on with Boomer, and they basically said it was just a cleanup procedure, that they didn't repair the meniscus. They were just cleaning up some debris from the tear. I guess it was not a major tear. It was just a minor thing, and they just cleaned it up. So, yeah, he could be ready to go. You know, I read something today. Landry Jones actually said he wouldn't be surprised if Roethlisberger plays this week, but I don't know. That's just, you know, one quarterback stroking the other one's ego probably, but you got to think you got to miss a game, right?
Oh, I would think that's incredible to me. I mean, that is just incredible. He could go in for surgery on Monday and be ready to roll for a Sunday game. Wow. Hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't expect it. I wouldn't expect it. But that might make them. I mean, honest to God, they could get. You know, I was looking at Pittsburgh's schedule. You know, they got the Patriots this week. At Baltimore. Then they come home and they host the Dallas Cowboys. All right, tough matchup there. They're going to go to Cleveland. They go to Indianapolis. They host the Giants. They go to Buffalo. They go to Cincinnati. They host Baltimore. They host Cleveland. This is a very, very, you know, a very, very doable schedule for this Pittsburgh team.
I would agree. I don't see, you know what, even if they do
There's
lose
nothing.
This week, they don't, yeah, I don't see this being the end of the world, that's for sure.
Exactly right. In fact, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, The Cowboys, all right, who knows if the Bills are for real or not? We don't know yet. That's a big question mark. They don't play Buffalo until December 11th. By that time, the Bills may have run out of steam, as frequently they always do. The Indianapolis Colts, you know, some people are saying right now, Pagano right now is on his dead man walking. Pagano might be dead man walking right now. The Giants aren't all that. The Cincinnati Bengals, I think, have shown they're not all that. There is nothing on this schedule for the remainder of the season, in my opinion, for the Pittsburgh Steelers that is not doable, with the exception of this coming game right now against the Patriots, where it's not likely that they're going to have a very good day.
Probably not.
The way Tom Brady is playing, for God's sake. That man is... I mean, it's just stupid. He is a man on a mission.
I had told you this before.
I hate to admit it. I know.
The worst thing is a pissed off Tom Brady who's coming in fresh and, you know, with a point to prove. We've seen this before. This is nothing new. You know, we've seen it after Spygate. We've seen it after Deflategate. We've seen it after other controversies along the way. You know, when the Patriots are being looked at with a fine-tooth comb and, you know, Brady's under the gun, don't matter. They just keep going harder and harder.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. We're going to touch on that game coming up here in a minute. Because I'm talking about the Bengals. Yeah, we'll go take a look at what happened to them against Pittsburgh or against New England here in a moment. But against this game against Miami with Pittsburgh, you know, just one of those games, right? It's the ebb and flow of the NFL. That's the way it goes, right? I mean, that it was just an off day. And because, I mean, you really can't blame it on Roethlisberger going down and getting hurt, because that didn't happen until late in the game. So, I mean, that's really what it was, right?
Well, we don't know when he got hurt. There's speculation he was playing. He was playing hurt.
Oh, really?
Because he wasn't very effective. So, but nonetheless, you're right. You know, it is what it is. You know, not often you see Roethlisberger throw two interceptions in a game. You know, and you know, Miami. I don't think Miami's all that. I mean, even with this win, it's like, yeah. You know, they had a running back go off. Okay, there you go. There's your one of your biggest reasons why. Jay Ajayi, or however you say his name, you know, 204 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's pretty impressive for, you know, a backfield that's not been very impressive, you know, the last few seasons. I think when it just comes right down to it, you're right. It's probably just one of those things when you get, you know, the ebb and flow of the season.
Yeah.
And
as you point out, the Miami Dolphins, I think they might just be worse than. I think they're about the worst I've seen them under Ryan Tannehill. To be honest with you, I think they're just about the worst I've seen them.
I think Ryan Tannehill is not. I think he has his confidence shaken on top of everything the way he's played, and you know, I just don't see him being, you know, a viable starter. You know, a solid franchise type quarterback in the NFL. I mean, yeah, he might do okay as a backup, come in from time to time, you know, and mop up or an injury situation, but I just don't see him being the guy. I haven't ever seen him being the guy, to be quite honest with you. I don't know, you know, I know they just paid him a lot of money. Was it not last year, but the year before. So, you know, they're probably stuck with him for a little bit, but if I was the front office of Miami, I would be making future plans for that position. I would not consider myself solid, you know, with Tannehill. I just don't see it there. And that team still has not looked right. I think, to be honest with you, I read a couple times, you know, one of the biggest problems of this team is Ross, the owner, is an absentee owner. He's very rarely in Miami, you know, and he lets the football people run the show to the point of, you know, no involvement. I think you have to have some ownership presence, you know, around the team. I mean, you can't have a $1 billion, you know, entity and not, you know, run it, or at least pay attention to it. And there's times where, you know, Stephen Ross just seems like he's just an uninterested owner. I don't understand but I've read he's just very, very infrequently in Miami. I think he's, you know, has offices in New York, and, you know, he's obviously running, you know, what made him a billionaire to begin with. But, you know, I think you got to have some kind of presence as an owner. You know, I think they tried to incorporate Dan Marino a little bit, but, you know, I don't think he was willing to do it without a piece of the team. And I don't think they were willing to give it to him. So, you know, I think the situation like John Elway out in Denver is, you know, Elway and that owner were very tight, and Elway is a part owner of that franchise. Now, they made him an equity partner, you know, with his team presidency. And clearly, you know, he's involved and engaged because, you know, the owner out there, I believe, is suffering from Alzheimer's or something along those lines, dementia, one of those ailments. And, you know, it's a shame. But, you know, I think John Elway's done an admirable job, you know, keeping that franchise afloat, you know, winning a Super Bowl, and a year removed from, you know, a Hall of Famer retiring, they're still in pretty good shape, you know, when it comes right down to it. I mean, they're contending for their division. They may be still the favorite to win that division. I don't know. They're kind of in a little slump right now, and the Raiders are, you know, even with them. So maybe we'll see something when they play head-to-head is obviously their division rival, so we'll see that at some point.
And, you know, Elway's an interesting case study, isn't he, when you talk about former kind of superstar players making the transition to ownership.
He's made it quickly.
He did it
in
seamlessly.
In front office, yes.
He did it seamlessly,
and quick.
Brennan. That's the thing that is
–
it almost is almost a natural, isn't it?
That may be why Marino's hesitant because, you know, if you're going to use Elway as the measuring stick, well, that's pretty tough to come up as well as he has. You know, maybe that's why – and maybe Marino just doesn't want to commit the time. I mean, clearly Elway is not afraid to put the hours in and do the work because he's very visible – you know, and present with the team. He's not a what you call a absentee owner or any of that crap. He's definitely you know, involved.
And be a hammer and make the tough decisions when he has to. I mean, that's the other thing. You know what I mean? You know, when you compare it to...
And I think they've drafted very well. I mean, Trevor Siemian, nobody heard of much, and he was drafted last year, and he's not playing horrible as a starter. And you know, Paxton Lynch, yeah, he's a little rough around the edges, but he's shown signs so far of what we've seen that he could be a player. The defense is still solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got, you know, maybe a little, some of the issues, maybe there's some issues on the other side, on the offense, but they're not many. You know what I mean? It's a pretty complete team, all things considered.
Yeah. Yep. You know, I compare it to you could make a comparison to so many, you know, that you could probably think of off the top of your head. But one that comes to my mind immediately, somebody like Mario Lemieux, you know, and the Pittsburgh Penguins. It did not work well in the very beginning. In fact, I think his first go-round with them was a complete and utter disaster. And he ultimately ended up coming back and playing, coming out of retirement and playing on the ice for a little while. And then went back to management, and then it was then things kind of settled down a little bit and got a little bit better. But you know, that wasn't quite as seamless. John Elway's has just been beautifully seamless, and it just seems so natural. You know, you know if John Elway were over with, and not that I'm a big John Elway fan because I never have been, but. If you were to see John Elway in the same role, I don't know, with the New York Jets or the Buffalo Bills, or something, it would almost seem, it would be like, what are you doing over there? That shouldn't be where you're at. You know, it's a natural, but.
No, you're right. Yeah, you know, he's synonymous with the Broncos. So, you know, that it works well, you know. It's a good all-around fit for the franchise. He's the face of the franchise. He's essentially running the franchise. He has a piece of the franchise. You know, there's nothing bad. You know, there's no negatives to the situation they got there. I'll be honest with you. You know, another guy that comes to mind that you think could do this would be a Peyton Manning. The only problem is the team he's synonymous with has a nut. And I don't know that, you know, he would be allowed to you know, to function properly in as the Colts, you know, as the same role with the Colts. I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, that I hate to say that. That's a shame, but you know, I'd almost, you know, he has very strong ties to Tennessee because he went to, you know, the University of Tennessee as a college player. I could almost see him, you know, picking that role up with the Titans if he's ever going to give that, you know, type of role a shot. I don't know that he will. I don't know. Clearly he's taking a year to decide what he wants to do because he's making commercials and he's in his bathroom in the commercials and, you know, he's just chilling. And, you know, if he wanted a job, he could have been, you know, there was supposedly a standing offer to put him on the lead broadcast crew for CBS. I don't know how true that is because that would be the Jim Nance, Phil Sims crew. I don't know that he would have displaced Phil Sims, but who knows? I mean, you know, CBS wanted him. He was, you know, an AFC player his whole life. So, you know, AFC would have, you know, broadcasting for the network that's primarily AFC would have been the.
He could do well there. He could do very well.
I don't think he wants to be a broadcaster. I think he wants he's always to me seemed like a competitive, not afraid to put the time in type of guy. I don't know if he'd be a coach, an offensive coordinator.
I could see him with the Volunteers. I could see him with the Volunteers.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. See, unfortunately, though, Peyton Manning's offense was very pro. It's not a college offense. It's a very pro-style offense.
Yeah, it is a pro-style. Yep.
It's a shotgun. It's lined up in the shotgun. It's 3-4 wide receiver sets. Maybe a 2 tight end set occasionally, but it's not going to be. It's not a college system. And clearly, as we've heard, you know, post-Peyton Manning era, you know, he was calling the shots, you know, with the Broncos, whether or not Kubiak had the title head coach. They were playing, you know, a Peyton Manning-style offense, whether they wanted to. They wouldn't say it last year, but we've heard it so much now. So, you know, I don't think his quote-unquote offense would translate well to the NFL or to the college game.
It's
so
interesting. It depends on what conference, Brandon. Certain conferences probably not as well. I'm trying to remember what conference.
I still think he's just the Tennessee. Yeah, I'm not. I don't follow it enough to know what style they play where. But I'll be honest with you. He's a perfect fit to the NFL. You know, period. I don't know if he wants to put that many hours.
Not a head coach, though. Not a head coach. I can't see a head coach. I don't know. I just can't see a head coach.
Well, I could see him. I could see him as a OC who becomes a head coach.
I could see him as an OC.
Yeah, but I could see him as a Mike McCarthy type, where he's still the play caller. He still runs the whole show, but he's still basically running the offense. That's what McCarthy does in Green Bay. And there's a couple other coaches. I believe Peterson's probably even calling the plays in Philadelphia. I don't believe he has. If he does have an offensive coordinator, you know, Peterson's heavily involved. We know that. It's
Frank Reich.
You know, very Andy Reid-esque. Yeah, Frank Reich. But
I know. You're like me. Yeah, right. Frank Reich. Mm-hmm.
This got Andy Reid's fingerprints all over it. So,
I hear
you know,
you.
Clearly Peterson's calling everything. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know if he's got that in him or not. We'll have to wait and see what the future entails, but I don't think we've heard the end of Peyton Manning. We may have as a player, clearly, but I don't think we have in the realm of football. And maybe he does decide to be a broadcaster. Maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe he does see himself as, you know, a front office type guy like John Elway. Maybe that's what he wants to do. Maybe he's just waiting for the right situation to present itself. I don't know. Clearly, you know, to do that job, you got to be invested. You got to live there. You know, I don't know, you know, Peyton.
Well, I can't imagine it being I can't imagine the Colts because.
No,
you know,
I can't
even
either.
Even
too much
even
of a nutcase.
Well, plus he's got that thing already designed out for his daughter and, you know, she's, you know, even during that time that he was, suspended or whatever for his DUI and drug problem. The daughter was in there running everything apparently. So, you know, that's already pre-willed out. You know, that's staying with the family for as long as the Ursays want it. So,
yeah, I would agree. But that doesn't mean, though, that, you know, see, you could have a situation where you have out in Denver like the Bolins.
Yes,
you know, Pat Bolin may be not functional, but, you know, he does have a son. And I believe the son is content with letting Elway run the show. I don't know that the Bolin family will be. You know, even once Pat does pass, I don't think that the Bolin family will be I don't think they're going to sell it, but I think they're going to, you know, for the foreseeable future, I think you're going to see John Elway basically being the face of that franchise.
And
that may work for Ursay's daughter, you know, with, you know, Peyton Manning. I don't see it happening, though, because Ursay's not all that old. I mean, he's, you know, he's probably in his 60s. He doesn't look to me to be a, you know, one of the older side of the owners. And you know, he's got to think he's going to be around for a while. And he's clearly unhinged. We know this.
Yes,
but,
we do.
You know, he basically has been running with a dysfunctional, you know, GM and head coach who clearly don't get along, even though they both renewed their contracts. It just doesn't make any sense. And the team looks terrible right now. They're a mess. They don't, you know, they don't look good in any form or fashion. They gave Luck a lot of money. They renewed the head coach, which, you know, I like the head coach of the Colts. I don't like him there. I think he would do better in another situation. You know, the coach GM deal in Indianapolis looks toxic to me from the outside. And I, you know, maybe that's what Peyton's waiting for. Maybe they're just going to wait till the whole thing blows up, and then maybe Irsay will reach out to Peyton, and maybe they'll try something. I don't know.
Yeah, pick it up from the ground up or something. Just dust up the embers.
Maybe.
You know, Pagano seemed
that's
to have
kind of what Elway did, if you think back.
Yes,
I mean,
was.
When Elway first came, the Broncos were terrible. Elway goes out, gets Peyton Manning, and turns him into a juggernaut for a couple of years, you know, two Super Bowl appearances, one win. I mean, I'm not a Peyton Manning fan. You know that. I always thought he was and his record does prove his playoff record. I don't know. He's big games and Peyton
overrated,
Manning just
overrated.
Yeah, they don't go together. But you know what? You can't take away what that team did, you know, and granted that team did it a lot, 90% on the back of the defense last year. But I still think Peyton Manning was the right choice over Osweiler, and they, you know, went the whole way. So, you know, you cannot knock how John Elway has handled the situation, and maybe, you know, we could see a repeat down the road. I don't know.
Pagano is a mystery because it did seem that he had some success there for a couple of seasons early on. And it's only been within the last 2 to 3 seasons that things have just kind of fallen apart. And you would think that it would be the opposite way around when you've got this young stud quarterback that everybody's looking at with Andrew Luck, and everybody's thinking to themselves, oh my God, he's one of the top 5, top 7 quarterbacks in the entire league. They haven't built anything around Andrew Luck. And that doesn't make any damn sense to me.
You can point to when it all fell apart for Pagano, and that's when Bruce Arians left to go be the head coach of the Cardinals.
Right.
And Arians has done pretty well as the head coach of the Cardinals. You know, even this year, they're struggling, you know, a little bit on the surface, but hanging in there. I think in their weak division, I think they're, you know, I think they still have a shot. I mean, Seattle's got a game and a half on them at the moment, but, you know, there's still a lot of games to go. And Arizona looked pretty good this past week, so we'll see. I think that's where Pagano and the Colts, you know, fell apart, to be quite honest with you. And I'll be honest, the other part is they don't ever seem to get – they don't fix the offensive line. I mean, Andrew Luck is constantly getting hit. I mean, he was out most of last year with injury, you know. They got to fix a lot.
They can't they've had consistent problems with their ground game. I mean, they just can't seem to find a running back.
Well, that's
there.
Also offensive line. Yep. You know, they can't block, you know.
You know, so you got this great quarterback who, this is what I'm saying, they've had this great quarterback that they're not building around. And, you know, that might be part and parcel of what some of Pagano's frustration has been with the general manager. Because, you know, he's saying, well, what the hell are we doing here? You know, what are you doing as far as personnel development? What are you doing as far as personnel, getting me personnel in here I can use on the field? You know, you made all this investment into Andrew Luck, and you got nothing around him. And you got no protection for him. I mean, you know.
You know,
in some respects, it's kind of the argument that's being made right now, and is a little bit concerning, albeit we're kind of hoping that, you know, some of this is going to get corrected over time with the Philadelphia Eagles and Carson Wentz. You go out and you make this big investment, and we don't have an offensive line that's reliable. And, you know, you got running back by committee, and you got a bunch of wide receivers who are stiffs who get the ball thrown to them perfectly, floated right into their arms, and they drop it.
Well,
you know.
I hear you.
Eddie Al.
Here's the thing, you know, with the Colts and what's around Luck. T.Y. Hilton is a great number 2 receiver.
Yep.
I don't
yep.
think he's a number 1.
I agree
I think part of the issue the other issues you just pointed out, that their running game has been non-existent. And that could be an issue with the backs, but it could also be an issue with the line. They brought Frank Gore in, who was lighting it up for the 49ers, who don't particularly strike me as a great offensive line, you know, out there that he ran behind, but he did an admirable job. He can't get anything here. And you know, you could say he's older, but you know what?
Yep, that's what I say.
He was solid the year before he went there. So, you know, I don't think that's the issue. I think the issue is more, you know, could be a scheme. It could be line. It could be, you know, who knows what it is. But, it, you know, it just doesn't pass the eye test, period.
I agree with you. You know, the problem with Hilton, too, is that while I'm in complete agreement with you, he's a WR2, not a WR1. They value him like a WR1. You know what I mean? They keep, he's, you know, but I think every, you know, as you just pointed out, the eye test doesn't dictate that anyhow.
No,
all right,
no, it doesn't. And until that stuff changes, I don't think teams going too far.
Nope. And it looks like it's already another very, very disappointing season for the Indianapolis Colts, who are now 2-4. Honest to God. Absolutely incredible. Lost another one last week. I actually thought that the Colts were actually going to pull that one off. But that's okay. I thought everybody was going to win that loss. And that's like everybody. I don't think I had, you know. Actually, I picked the.
Not a good day of picks.
No, it wasn't. I picked the Patriots to win, so I did have this one right. Because how can you not pick the Patriots on a week-to-week basis at this point right now? New England, 35. Cincinnati Bengals, 17. Brandon, I'm looking at the box score for this one. I got all the stats, all the breakdowns in front of me. And when you look at it on the Cincinnati side, they didn't play a bad game, Brandon. They did not play. I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't perfect. But it wasn't a bad game. Dalton, 21 of 31, 254 yards, had a touchdown, no interceptions, and 103.4 passer rating. They had a ground game going, 120 yards on the ground, and it was mixed up between Jeremy Hill and wait a minute. Giovanni Bernard actually got involved? Yeah. A.J. Green, 88 yards. Brandon LaFell had a touchdown. Suddenly I saw he got picked up in our fantasy league. Again, I think this will be the third team he's with so far this season on our fantasy league. Did not have a bad game. The problem is they ran up against the buzzsaw that is Tom Brady. 29 of 35. Jesus God. 29 of 35. 376 yards, three touchdowns, and 140 passer rating. We've talked about it before. Perfect is 158.3.
One more touchdown, he would have had it, I think. I think you got to have, to get the perfect rating, you got to have four touchdowns, no interceptions, and over 300 or 350 yards. His completion percentage is enough. I think the only piece that kept him from the perfect rating was I think he needed another touchdown. I think that's I'm pretty sure that's part of the formula. I think you definitely got to be over 300, maybe over 350. I don't think you have to have 400 to get it. And his completion percentage he only has six incomplete passes out of 35. So that's certainly not the issue. And he had no interceptions. So I think the big thing would have been one more touchdown pass and we'd be talking about the perfect rating.
It's absolutely sick. Gronkowski had 162 yards in the air and a touchdown.
He's certainly waking up now that Brady's back, isn't he?
Yep. We talked about it a little bit the other day while the game was going live. Flavor of the week this week, Martellus Bennett. I had a feeling that wasn't going to be the case. Yeah, James White, two touchdowns, eight receptions, 47 yards. Throw some numbers at you here real quick just on Tom Brady alone. Brady right now, only two games in. Now, mind you, most of his peers have either five or six games in. Tom Brady right now is 32nd on the list of quarterbacks, 32nd on the list of quarterbacks out of 40, 32nd of 40. Okay. That's only after two games with 782 yards already over two games. 782 yards, 76% completion rate, average yard per attempt, 10.4, six touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 135.5 passer rating. It's absolutely yards per game. He's passing at 391. The Cincinnati Bengals did not play poorly, really. They did not play badly. They just ran into Tom Brady. That's what it came down to. The New England Patriots
The defense stepped up at the right times too, you know, because they only kept seven. They kept them to 17 points with the Bengals putting up, you know, real, like you said, decent numbers on the offensive side. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, I think you gotta commend the defense for at least stopping them when it counted. You know what I mean? You know, like I said, Dalton didn't throw any interceptions. He had fairly decent line for, you know, a quarterback. The two running backs together did, you know, a good job. It just, you know, I think you got to look at it. The Patriots are a complete package. I mean, yes, it right now it's Tom Brady's stats that everybody's looking at, but you know, I think this defense is a lot better than everybody thought
that it
has this year.
Right.
And, you know, right now, the way things are going, you know, that's a good thing. I like it. We got a couple guys out hurt, and they still managed to, you know, keep everything afloat. So, you know, I'm not unhappy. Let me
absolutely
put it to you that
amazing.
Way. As a Patriots fan, I'm not unhappy. And right now, there's nobody in the AFC that looks like a complete enough team to do much with them. I'll be honest.
Okay.
And that's not just me. I mean, I was worried about Pittsburgh early, but Pittsburgh, as of late, looked shaky. You know, I'm not saying that won't change by the end of the year, but, you know, right now, if you look across the landscape of the AFC, I mean, you got, you know, the Raiders, they look pretty good, but they still give up a lot of points. Denver's, you know, dealing with a sore, you know, shoulder on their quarterback. There's really the Texans are a fraud at 4-2. There's nobody that really scares me. Buffalo, they're, you know, in second place of the East, and they're on a 4-game winning streak. They better be prepared in 2 weeks because they got the Patriots coming into Buffalo after Rex Ryan was thumping his chest of shutting them out in New England with a pissed off Brady and a probably even more pissed off Belichick. That team is going to get their ass handed to them in that game. I don't care what Buffalo thinks they're coming up with. They won 16-0 in Foxborough. Look out. The Patriots are coming to Buffalo in 2 weeks, and they're coming, you know, ready to go because they don't have a game after that. They get their bye after that. They got Pittsburgh this week with probably without Ben Roethlisberger. They go to Buffalo, and then they got a bye. So, you know, they're not traveling really far to any of these games. I don't see any reason why the Patriots don't go, you know, 2-0 in that 2-game stretch, and then they get a nice bye. Hopefully, they'll be sitting at 7-1 coming off the bye.
Well, okay, and you're going exactly where I. In fact, I've got it up. I've had it up as you've been talking and looking at it. I've got the entire Patriots schedule in front of me. You aptly point out. And I think your observation about the Buffalo game is spot on. We've already kind of said, well, this is a tough game coming up here for Pittsburgh. So you got to give the edge to the Patriots this week. In fact, the Patriots are a 7-point road favorite. Next, the week after that, they go to Buffalo. Then you got the bye. All right. Now, I got a question for you. Is there here's one thing we do know. You and I both know that when it comes to division games, the Patriots can struggle a little bit. It doesn't seem to matter. It doesn't matter whether it's the Dolphins. Sometimes the Dolphins come out and they play them tough, and the Dolphins can give them a run. Sometimes the Jets can. Sometimes Buffalo can. All right. Week 10 through week 17. Hosting Seahawks at the 49ers, at the Jets. They host the Rams. They host the Ravens. They go to Denver. Then they host the Jets and close out on the road in Miami. I'm going to be honest.
Well, the only two games on there that even remotely, you know, would get my attention would be the Bronco game and the Miami game. And I'll tell you why I'm discounting both the Jets games. We watched the Jets last night, and they're terrible.
Oh, man.
They're god-awful of a football team. Ryan Fitzpatrick is just mistake after mistake. Geno Smith is waiting in the wings. They're getting ready to roll him out. I mean, I believe he even finished the game.
They did last night.
There's nothing there that's scary as a Patriots fan. I'm sorry. I understand what you're saying, and you're right. They have struggled in the past, but I don't see them losing to Buffalo in 2 weeks, and I don't see them losing either Jet game. Maybe the Miami game in Miami the end of the year. You know, it could be one of those where it really don't matter for them. You know, Miami did look okay this week against Pittsburgh. We just talked about them a little bit. I still don't think, you know, they haven't turned any corner, and they're not going in the right direction or any of that for sure. So, you know, the Bronco game's in Denver, and Denver's, you know, got that good defense, and you know, Trevor Siemian will probably be all healed up by then. Hopefully they'll be, you know, the Broncos will be back to full power and make that an interesting game. And historically, the Patriots do not do well going into Denver. That's just one of those things where if you're ever going to find a black mark on the Brady Belichick tenure, it's playing in Denver against the Broncos for whatever reason. And it really don't matter what era. I mean, it can go all the way back to when Sterling Sharp was still there. You know, they just have always seemed to struggle in Denver against the Broncos. You know, so, you know, that game obviously would stick out. Other than that, I think, you know, that, you know, Seattle doesn't scare me. Seattle's
nope.
You know, they look like it.
I think Seattle's a, I think they're a fraud. I really
yeah,
do.
I would agree. I don't know if I call
really
them
do.
A fraud. I don't think they're all that. Period.
I think they're overrated. I think they are way overrated.
No,
you know, I know that they won this past week. They won this past week against the Falcons. But look at that game. You know, this is a Seattle team that prides itself on its defense, and there were 50 points scored in the entire game. Seattle allowed 24 points scored against them, against the Falcons. Although, all right, maybe a lot of us shouldn't be surprised because, hey, we talked about. You know, that's all the Falcons have got is their offensive side of their ball. That's it. They don't have any defense to speak of. But I didn't come away from that Seattle-Atlanta game necessarily saying to myself, oh, wow, this Seattle team has really found themselves. They really, okay, now they're starting to look like that Super Bowl running team from a couple of seasons ago. I don't get that impression from this Seattle team at all. Do you?
No. Not at all. This Seattle team is, what's the word?
Pedestrian, mediocre.
Yeah, all of them. They all fit.
You know, now, if that's the case, you know, who wins the NFC West? Well, maybe Seattle wins it by default, huh? Maybe Seattle wins it just by default.
No,
I don't know.
Arizona. I think Arizona comes back. I think Arizona's going to pull that division out in the long run. And I'll tell you why. That running back, David Johnson, is a beast. We watched that game on Sunday night a little bit. Or no, that was last night against the Jets.
Yep.
He's just insane. And they got, you know, they still have Larry Fitzgerald who can still play. John Brown, if they can ever figure out how to get Michael Floyd's head out of his backside and get him going, they're going to be good. And Carson Palmer looked better last night. I think they're going to turn things around, and I think they're going to rise to the top in that. In the NFC West, I just don't see. Yeah, Seattle's there now, and the Rams are 3-3. The Rams are the worst 3-3 team I've ever seen. So you know, that's that. I think Arizona does find a way to to win this. I mean, they're, like I said, they're a game and a half behind the Seahawks. The Seahawks had their bye already. The Cardinals haven't. When the Cardinals go on bye, you know, we'll see if Seattle still is going to get a full two games on them or not. We'll see where they're at.
All right. I hear you. You know, I just going back real quick to the remainder of this New England schedule and what you have coming up here in the second half of the season. I mean, based on what you're saying, this team could end up with maybe three losses. It could be more. I'm not saying that that's a predict that you're making. It could be more. But, you know, right now we know that there's one loss, and maybe identifying that there are two others that you're that really do kind of like you sit there and go, not sure. Broncos, not sure. Dolphins in the very last game of the season. Is that on January 1st? Yes, it is January 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, there you go with that one. The AFC West, Kansas City Chiefs last week against the Oakland Raiders. I picked Oakland. You picked Oakland, I believe, on Thursday night on our Friday House Sports Show. God, Oakland looked inept.
Chargers, actually.
Hello?
If I remember correctly, I said I think I picked the Chargers in that game against
Chiefs,
the Raiders.
Chiefs.
Oh, Chiefs, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, you picked the Raiders.
Picked
the Raiders. The Raiders just looked inept. Now, the weather wasn't great, okay? If I recall, I mean, it was raining badly.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, you had some heavy rain at different times. But both teams were dealing with that. The Raiders just looked bad. They couldn't get a ground game going. The Kansas City defense seemed to be stopping them with everything. Passing was off, you know, maybe not in the box score necessarily. Derek Carr was 22 of 34, 225 yards. He did have a touchdown. He had an interception. I mean, he wasn't horrible at 81.1 passer rating. But couldn't get the ground game going. The Kansas City was stopping the ground game. Amari Cooper did have 129 yards through the air. Michael Crabtree was non-existent, much to my chagrin. They just didn't look like they had their act together. And I got to be honest with you, I kind of felt bad because I'm rooting for the Raiders this year. To me, they're a team that I would really – I'd almost like to see them win the division. I really would. I'd almost like to. It wouldn't bother me. It would not bother me in the least if the Oakland Raiders won the division. Right now, it didn't set them back too badly. Right now, they're in a tie with Denver at the top of the AFC, 4-2. Denver 4-2. Oakland holds the division tiebreaker right now on that one. Kansas City, though, right behind them now at 3-2 and with a game in hand. So. I know we didn't watch the entire game, but we did have it on for a bit.
No, they're a young team. I think they struggled in a division game. You know, it's hard to, I'm not going to fault them, but at the same time, you know, I don't think the Chiefs are that bad of a team. I know you're not necessarily a big fan. I think they have some pieces in place. I think the Chiefs, you know, if I'd have predicted, and I know we didn't go division by division. I would have thought the Chiefs, you know, would have been a second or third place team with the Broncos, you know, probably not even in the conversation because,
right.
You know, we weren't expecting to see what we got. So, you know, I think, you know, I probably would have had the Chiefs as number two behind the Raiders. So, you know, I just don't think they're that bad of a team. Again, like I said, it's a division game. So you're going to have this from time to time. You know, especially with a young team, and they are young at heart. Don't you know, Derek Carr's only a couple years into this thing, so you know, we'll just have to wait and see how it all plays out. But I don't think that this is a deal breaker, you know, for the Raiders. I think this is just, you know, the ebb and flow of an NFL season. How they react will be interesting.
If you were to make a selection on a division winner today, based on what you've seen up to this point of all the teams, and we've had a chance to, we have had a chance to look at all four of them at different times already so far through the season. Who would you pick to win the division? I think I have to go with Denver.
And you know, I'll tell you why. They've only played one division game, and it was a loss. But, you know, that means all the teams have to come to Denver. And playing in Denver is a clear advantage for the home team. And I gotta think that, you know, that'll help them going down the stretch, you know, playing in that thin air. I think that's a huge advantage for that team, period. You know, when they get to play at home. You know, so when you practice in it, you play in it, you're used to it, you know. I think the Broncos win the division in the end. I think the Chiefs and the Raiders are going to fight for second and maybe even contend for a wild card. I mean, that still puts them in pretty good shape within the conference for a wild card. Matter of fact, one of them would be a wild card team right now. Probably. Yep. Actually, I guess technically the way it's listed, Denver would be the wild card. And the Raiders would be on top, but you know, I don't think that's the way it's going to finish. So, and the Chiefs already had their bye. So, Denver and the Raiders both have a bye coming. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a pretty solid division when it's all said and done. You may get the division winner plus a wild card out of the West.
Agreed.
I don't think the Bills stay there. I'm sorry. I don't think the Bills are that good of a team. I think they're riding the high of that win in New England. And I think that's going to come to a screeching halt on them at some point.
So do I.
I'm not sure who they play this week.
You know, I guess you would have to go over to the AFC North to find your other wild card, right?
Maybe. No, Buffalo's in Miami. So, yeah, that could be another win for Buffalo. I don't think Miami's gonna beat that defense. So, it's hard to say. You know, you don't know. I mean, so far, the Bengals haven't shown me much. The Ravens, they're kind of up and down. The Browns suck.
Yep.
So, Ravens, I don't know.
Ravens,
I don't know that
losers,
that's where it comes from. Maybe the Bills can win enough. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And maybe you do get two wild cards out of the AFC West.
Or yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe there. Maybe you get, maybe, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it plays out.
Yep.
I don't think the Texans are, you know, a good team, but that's a terrible division. So, you know, they may win that division by default.
Well, yeah, I think
in
that
the
might
South,
be.
So, yeah,
I think that might be exactly.
I don't know.
The
I think
it
I think picking a wild card team right now it's just a tough thing to do. A
little difficult.
We're not,
difficult.
We're not sure. We're not sure who's for real and who's not yet.
Great
Cincinnati
point.
Could break the ship and get themselves back up there. You don't know. It's hard to, you
yep.
know, it's, like I said, it's hard at this point.
Great point. The division leaders are coming into focus,
yes.
focus a little bit, not even, that's not even solid in some divisions, but they're coming into focus. But no, to try to guess right now, the wild cards, very, very difficult to do with only six games in. I had mentioned, and I do want to touch on the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers yet before we get out of here this evening, but I did mention the Atlanta Falcons and the Seattle Seahawks, and the Seattle Seahawks and the Falcons got together to put up 50 points in that one game, 26-24. Seattle won that one. That takes Seattle to 4-1, drops Atlanta to 4-2. An Atlanta team, that I've kind of been not promoting, but I've been saying, hey, I don't think they're getting enough respect. A Seattle team that I have been, that I have absolutely been disrespecting. Matt Ryan had a ridiculous number of yards, but to get to the yardage that he had to put the ball in the air again 42 times, 27 of 42, 335 yards, three touchdowns, one interception, and a 102.8 passer rating. Russell Wilson on the other side was 25 of 37, 270, 0-0, no touchdowns, no interceptions, 88.8 passer rating. Ground games for both teams, somewhat negligible. I guess the defense on Seattle side was a little bit better. You know, they hit Ryan 13 times, sacked him four times. The Falcons didn't get to Russell Wilson near as many times. They only sacked him once for 9 yards. So in the end, it would appear, Brendan, that little extra edge of the Seattle defense might have been the difference in knocking Matt Ryan around a little bit and knocking him off his game. That probably was the difference. But for the most part, these two teams pretty even.
Yeah, I would agree. They were pretty
even. You know what? They are pretty even when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think either one's a good team, I'll be honest with you. I mean,
exactly,
they both have
right.
a 4-2 record, and I don't like either one of them. I don't like Seattle's offense, and I certainly don't like Atlanta's defense. And, you know, we were talking a couple weeks ago, and I was saying that the Falcons could very well be 4-4 when they get to the eighth game. They're 4-2, so they got to lose two in a row. But, you know, I don't think that's out of the realm considering they play San Diego and then they play Green Bay, and Green Bay's going to need that to win. So basically, for me to be right, I need the Chargers to upset them this week, and that would be an upset. I could admit that much of it. I don't think it's a big upset. I don't know what the line is on that game, but it's in Atlanta, so I got to think Atlanta's favored. I just don't like the Falcons. I don't like their defense. They've done nothing to make me, you know, like them more. And Matt Ryan, you know, you're saying he's put up a lot of yards, and he did, but he did throw one interception too. That's probably the difference in this game. You know, that turnovers are huge in a game like this where you got teams that are, you know, it's a 2-point game, and you know, you got Russell Wilson's line isn't particularly spectacular, but, you know, he didn't throw any interceptions. So, you know, you got to give him a little credit on that side.
Matt Ryan, through six games, has thrown three interceptions total.
Not horrible.
Not horrible at all, considering he's already thrown 15 touchdowns. So 15-3
you know
right
what,
now.
Matt Ryan, Matt, you can't argue with the Matt Ryan and that Atlanta's offense. The part I don't like about the team is I think their defense.
Oh, I understand
got
what you're saying. Yeah, I
don't think we've seen before. You know, teams can't win without at least a serviceable defense, and I don't even think this defense is remotely serviceable. So you know that's why I don't like the team.
No, I fully understand what you're saying, and I got you. I'm just pointing out various stats as I come across them here. And you're asking about you were asking there about the line for the Atlanta game. You're talking about this week against San Diego, I believe. Is that
correct?
What you were asking?
Yeah.
Atlanta is a 6.5-point home favorite. Over under on that one is the highest on the board at 53.5. Yeah, of course.
That game's going to be a shootout. They'll probably put up 65 or 70 points between them in that game.
Yep, absolutely right.
You could see a 38-35 game when it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
Who
yep,
wins?
No doubt.
I don't know.
No doubt about that.
I don't like the 6.5. I would definitely take the Chargers in the points. I don't see the Falcons, you know, the Chargers aren't a good team, but they have some weapons on offense. And against a bad defense, they, you know, Phillip Rivers should be able to put up some numbers.
Well, and as you point out, when you get into a shootout game, frequently you'll see those end by 3 points, 4 points, probably no more than four. That's generally the case. And you know, sometimes it can be even less than that, too. You know, as we saw here, 26-24. I mean, you know, that's, like I said, 50 points right there. So, and, you know, you wouldn't have expected 24 points being scored against that Seattle defense, which still is ranked in the top five in the NFL and has been now for what? This is their third season in a row that they have one of the top-ranked defenses. All right. Dallas Cowboys, Green Bay Packers, Brandon, 30-16 against the Green Bay Packers. Dak Prescott, again, 18-27, 247, three touchdowns, one interception, 117.4 passer rating. Look at the numbers Ezekiel Elliott put up again. 157 yards on the ground. You know, he had another 17 yards through the air. 175 yards, multi-purpose yards total. Two touchdowns to Cole Beasley. Green Bay, a lot of talk, Brandon, about the fact that Aaron Rodgers, something wrong with him. He doesn't look right. You know, Aaron Rodgers isn't Aaron Rodgers. 31 of 42, 294, one touchdown, one interception, 90.8. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what the negative talk about Aaron Rodgers has been. I don't think Rodgers has looked all that bad in what I've seen. What's your read on Aaron Rodgers?
Well, interesting you say that, because there's actually a quote out there today. He was apparently interviewed by Mike Garofalo, the NFL media. I don't know what NFL media is, but whatever. His quote is, "I'm just a little bit off," Rodgers said. "We've been a little bit off collectively. I'm confident we're going to get it fixed pretty soon." So it doesn't sound like Rodgers is in panic mode, but he is acknowledging something's not quite right. So maybe they got to figure that out. They look off. They don't look like in sync like they started the year. I mean, you know, it started the year off. Rodgers and Jordy Nelson looked like they hadn't missed a beat with, you know, Nelson being out all last year with the preseason ACL. And, you know, Randall Cobb still looks, you know, productive. Eddie Lacy's been, you know, pretty much a beast for the first part of the year. Now he's a little dinged up with an ankle, probably not playing Thursday. That report's out there today too as well. So, you know, as a matter of fact, I believe the Packers pulled off a trade today with the Chiefs for Nile Davis.
Correct.
Because not only is Lacy on the shelf for this week, Starks is nursing a knee injury and may be out even longer. So Nile Davis may get to see some carries, you know, on Thursday night, even though he's going to be pretty new to the team. But, you know, I think Green Bay can get it fixed. I don't think this is the end of the year, the end of the world, rather. For Green Bay, I think they'll figure it out.
I guess you got to go inside the numbers. I mean, you know, this is one of those where maybe the eye test defies you a little bit. You know, I watch a game, I'm thinking, okay, Aaron Rodgers doesn't look. Yeah, I mean, all right, you know, missing a few. It's not like he's throwing a hell of a lot of interceptions or anything. He's not. He's only thrown four interceptions the entire season. But his completion rate is 60.2, which is, that's probably below the average. So 60.2, that's where it's showing up. 88.4 passer rating, 10 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. So as you point out, you know, it started out really hot, and then it now seems to have cooled off a tad. And maybe that's what's becoming evident, or, you know, I guess a little bit more visible to folks that are watching in on the game going, wait a minute. You know, this doesn't look like the same team that we were looking at, you know, before.
Right. Well, luckily now, for the for the Packers. They got the Bears this week on a short week on Thursday night. And, yes, it's a division game, but the Bears have just been god-awful this year. So I think it's a chance for the Packers to get healthy. In other words, yeah, they're not going to have Eddie Lacy. He's going to be nursing the ankle. I think they can win this game without Lacy, you know, get you know, some things clicking on offense and get Lacy back to where he was. You know, I think the Packers, they're going to come out of this all right, because when you have that Thursday game, it's almost like the bye week, because you get a long break from – and I think that may just be what the Packers need. I think this is good. They come back quick. They play, you know, in 4 days rest against a team they should beat. You know, I think this could work out well for the Packers in the short term, and then, you know, eventually for the rest of the year.
All right, now let's go over and take a look at the Cowboys side of this. The Cowboys side of this coin. They beat them by almost double, as I point out, 30-16. Dak Prescott, 3 touchdowns and an interception. And again, Ezekiel Elliott with all those yards on the ground. Summer right now. Now, mind you, Minnesota was on a bye, so out of sight, out of mind. Okay. Minnesota right now, we must be reminded, are unbeaten. Dallas does have at least the one loss. So Dallas right now is 5-1. Minnesota, however, is 5-0. So as we pointed out, they're the only unbeaten team in the entire league. Some, however, are saying that at this point right now, at this moment right now, the Dallas Cowboys are the best team in the NFC. Where do you fall down on that one?
It's pretty hard to argue with, to be honest with you. The two rookies, they look really good. They went into Green Bay and they just destroyed Green Bay in Green Bay. I had kind of said, you know, this game, if Dak Prescott comes out, not only wins the game and looks good, he's got to be the starter. It even more convinced me. I don't care how healthy Tony Romo is. You don't switch. You don't switch on the momentum got going. Here's the best part. They've been doing it without Dez Bryant, who's been nursing an injury, a hairline fracture in his leg. You know, I don't think that you can even remotely consider breaking up what they got going right now. And even Jerry Jones was asked again about this situation on making it. And instead of now coming out saying Romo's our starter, his quote, "I don't have any idea," was his quote today. You know, he goes, no one does as to what the situation will be in a game or games down the road. That's a direct quote from Jerry Jones. So he's already waffling on Tony Romo's our starter. You know what I mean? He goes, to continue the quote, "We don't have any idea. The main thing is we're all looking at the same music and feel the same thing." In other words, the way I'm reading that is they like the vibe of this team, the way this team's playing. And I don't see, you know, we watched the, you know, Monday Night Countdown. They were talking about it. Everybody said that this game changed it. You can't possibly go back to Romo now. And I'm even more convinced. I know you feel the other way. So
yeah,
this should be an interesting conversation after you get to weigh in on your side. I just don't see how you can take a team that could, that basically is two brain cramps away from being possibly 6-0 on the backs of two rookies who are both lighting it up. You can't change the dynamic of this team and bring in an often injured Tony Romo. I don't care how much you're paying him. I don't care if he's the veteran leader. You know what? The same thing happened in New England with Tom Brady and Drew Bledsoe. And Drew Bledsoe was considered, you know, a far and away veteran starter making all the money. And, you know, Belichick stuck with Brady. And where did that take him? Oh, only to 4 Super Bowl rings.
Was one difference. There was one difference there, Brandon. And I think you would admit to this one. The difference there was the Patriots did not know that they had a franchise quarterback with Tom Brady. They had no clue. They didn't know. They just put him in there.
But
they
stuck
him
with
there.
Him after he came in and played well. And that's exactly what Dak Prescott has done. He's come in and he played well in the absence of your injured starter. You know, unfortunately, the way the NFL goes, it's a lot of momentum and a lot of streaky, you know, play. And I'm sorry, you just can't take away the way this team looks almost unbeatable right now. Dallas does. You know,
well,
you go into Green Bay and you just crush them on both sides of the ball.
I'm looking at the clock here, and I'm saying, okay, well, we may not actually have time to get into a full blown conversation, so I might actually reserve it for Thursday night, and then get into a little bit more of it, you know, and even you know we'll get Sidekick involved in it, and you know, get Matt involved in it, and maybe even get our good buddy Greg Frat House Sports friend Greg from down in Texas involved in it. Because I asked Greg tonight, I said, what's the sentiment down in your neck of the woods? What's the sentiment down there in Cowboys country about what you guys should do? Do you put Romo in, or do you let Dak Prescott play? And he said to every person that he's heard, talked to, et cetera, you don't make a move. You stick with Prescott.
Yep.
That's the sentiment coming out of that region. No. Do I agree with it? No, I don't. I don't, because...
Yeah, that's fine. You're entitled to your opinion as well, but I guarantee you, I can almost, unless something dramatic happens with play over the next couple of weeks till whenever Romo's ready to go, or Prescott himself gets injured, I don't see any way they make a switch. If everything stays status quo, if they keep playing the way they've been playing, and Prescott keeps playing the way he has and doesn't start making a bunch of mistakes, which he's shown no signs he's going to. You know, he's played pretty consistent level of play, you know, barring an injury or anything else. I don't see any way you can put Tony Romo back in. You're massacring your franchise. Because, you know, the kind of run Dallas is on right now often ends in a Super Bowl appearance. And I don't think right now, if you look up and down, short of the Minnesota Vikings, I don't think you can make an argument for another team in the NFC. You can for the Vikings right now because they're playing well on both sides of the ball and they are undefeated. Until somebody, you know, beats them, you know, you got to give them a little bit of credit. I think if they played in an NFC championship game right now, I think Dallas would win. So,
all right. Well, I'll tell you what. Well, I'm going to put it back up on the. It's going to be back up on the agenda on Thursday night for our Frat House Sports Show. And
maybe we'll have more news by then. Anyway, you never know. The Cowboys are on a bye, so they're not going to be much.
They're on a bye this week. So we'll get back into it on Thursday night. And that's a perfect segue for me to remind everybody that's the next time you want to be here with us on the Frat House Sports Radio Network is Thursday night for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. But I don't even remember what number, 266, I believe, something like that. Coming to you here Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. You want to be here for that. And I'll be back here with you on Saturday afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern time for a relaxed Frat House Saturday. And then Sunday morning, not too many of these left, only about 5 of them now, 11 a.m. Eastern time for our Racetrim Motorsports Hour as we're going to be getting ready for Chase Race number 6 in NASCAR. There you go. That's our lineup for this week. Thanks, Brandon. Thanks to everybody that's been listening in this evening. You got some sports on this evening, always. Got some Major League Baseball. Well, and you got to know there's some NHL hockey going on as well. Hey, I think there might be a little bit of NBA real season action going. All right, there you go. Catch up with us here on Thursday night. Thanks for listening in.